Welcome to another episode of Little Anime Podcast, where we talk about anything anime related, games, movies, shows, anything anime related we talk about. Let me just get into our news topic, and then we'll get into our main news section, and then we'll get into our main topic, which I'm sure some of you guys can kind of tell by the opening, but there's a lot of news, and there was some news I wanted to say from last week, but I didn't. I did post a bonus episode, me discussing and talking about my top 20 animes. So if you guys want to, and there is a video version of that up on YouTube. So if you guys want to check that out, go ahead. It'll be on my YouTube channel, Little Anime Gamer. And yeah, and then I do have the bonus episode up, so you guys can check that out on like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and all that stuff that all those podcasting apps and stuff. So let's just get into it. First piece of news from AnimeNewNetwork.com. World's End production founder, Voltron producer Ted Capel passed away. This is an old news. Apparently he passed away on April 4th. He was 77. He was, I'm trying to see if it remembers, if it tells me what exactly. I don't think it was COVID, I think the article tells you. I think it was some other disease, that he had that he was struggling with. Let's see. No, not that I can see, but it was something I did. I remember it just wasn't COVID related. FNX news from AnimeNewsNetwork.com. High Dive streams Nana anime. I did see this. So High Dive announced that it will be streaming the English dub version and subtitle version of Nana. I used to love Nana. It's been years since I've seen it. So for people who have the subscription to High Dive, you'll be able to watch the dubbed and subtitle version of Nana. It's a very good series. Sadly, the manga has been on hiatus for like over 10 years now. So we'll probably never get the full conclusion of that, but the anime is still very good. So I definitely recommend, especially for girls, to watch that. So yeah, it also premiered on, the anime premiered in Japan in 2006. Viz Media previously released the series on DVD, and Netflix and Hulu previously streamed the series as well. So I'm not sure if it's, I don't think it's on Netflix anymore, and I don't believe it's on Hulu anymore. But for people who have High Dive, you'll be able to watch that. Next news from AnimeNewsNetwork.com. This talks about the new Detective Conan movie, Detective Conan the Scarlet Bullet. What is that? 1,533,052 tickets, earning 2,218,000. Well, actually, no. I think that's Million. That's billion. That's 2,218,130,800 yen, which would be about 20.5 million US dollars in the first 3 days to rank number one in the Japanese box office on its opening in opening weekends. This is the 24th film in the Detective Conan franchise. The film was supposed to open up in April of last year, but got delayed like everything else. So that's definitely one I'm looking forward to. So I can't wait for that to come over to our side and not be able to watch, because I, as I've probably mentioned a few times, I've watched Detective Conan. It is in my top 20s. I've seen all of the movies and I've pretty much seen most of the anime to kind of know what's going on and see, kind of figure out the characters that are there. So that's, you know, something for that. Next, from comicbooks.com, Data or Dragon's Blood, apparently it's getting a season 2 that's going to be on Netflix. I'm not sure if this is correct, this isn't one of the older articles, but it's, I guess it's supposed to come out on the 19th of it, if it is there. So yeah, check that out. Next piece of news, from silicono.com, Yu Hakusho Genshin Battle Spirits will cover events of the anime. Now this was something that was very interesting. I had no idea. Apparently this is a mobile game that's going to be available on, what is it, on Android and iOS to Japanese audience. So we here in the United States probably won't get it until much later. But apparently there is going to be this Yu Yu Hakusho mobile game, and it's going to be showing or pretty much going through the story of the anime and manga. So that's very, very interesting for people who are a huge Yu Yu Hakusho fan, which is pretty funny because that's also in my top 20. So I was really excited when I saw that. So I hope it does come over to our side and I can play it. Next piece of news from comicbook.com. This is just a kind of a rumor for the Fairy Tail anime. It talks about, as you know, with Eden Zero, people are kind of speculating that the Fairy Tail anime might come back with its sequel, the 100 Years Quest, that I did mention that the regular Fairy Tail manga is ended, but the person who created it has created the Eden Zero that's out and has created the 100 Years Quest manga that's going on. So people are speculating that that might get an anime adaptation, which I honestly would be ecstatic for, because then it would bring me back into the whole world of Fairy Tail again, and, you know, getting reintroduced to our characters, Natsu, Lucy, Gray, Urza, Wendy, Gajil, and just the whole Fairy Tail guild. Like, so that'd be very exciting if that is true. Next piece of news from comicbook.com. This talks about the Attack on Titan manga ending and how some people, apparently there's a petition going out for the to have an alternative ending. Now, I myself have not read any of the manga for Attack on Titan. I am an anime-only fan only because I didn't want to be spoiled on stuff, especially during that whole 2-3 year gap between season 1 and 2. And people was like, oh, I read the manga, do you just want me to tell you? I was like, no, I'd rather just watch it myself, because this is definitely one of them series, like, either, you know, you read it for yourself or you watch it, but so much stuff it happens and it's revealed that you kind of don't want to get spoiled on stuff. So I have been holding off, I've been skipping out on videos, you know, people talking about it, because I want to experience it myself. I'm thinking, and probably I do it when, like, the last episode of the dub, because I've only ever watched a Attack on Titan dub. Well, I watch most of my show's dubs, but I'll probably wait till the last episode of part one is out dubbed. Then I am hoping maybe I can make a reaction video so you guys can see my reactions to the 4th season. So definitely look forward to that. Next piece of news. This is from heaton.com. This talks about Okima Kobayashi, who is known for his work as director on Naruto Shippuden. Apparently, he has passed away. So, he passed away on the 17th of April, with his ongoing battle with cancer was the cause of his death. He had been battling cancer of the kidney for the past 2 years and sadly succumbed to his illness earlier this month. So, rest in peace for the director for Naruto Shippuden. I'm sure a lot of people, talk about it. Oh, he also worked on the last Naruto the movie, which I honestly really loved that last Naruto movie before, it kind of jumped into Boruto. So, rest in peace and thank you for all your work and everything you've done so far. Everything you've done and, bringing us all these shows and whatnot. Next news from Anime News Network. Apparently, this manga called Girlfriend Girlfriend's getting an anime adaptation, supposed to premiere on July 2nd. Let's see. Here's the synopsis. Noya got a girlfriend, the gorgeous Sachi-chan, and through their intensities, often pit them against each other like fire and ice. They're totally uncontrollably in love with each other. He vows to never cheat. When out of the blue, he receives another confession. Nagisa's cute, sweet, and she made him lunch to boot. He knows he can't cheat, but he can't let a cutie like this get away. So what does so he does a logical thing. He asks Sasuke for permission to date them both. The confidence, the arrogance, the very gall. No matter the outcome, Naruto's future will be very lively. So I've never even heard of this manga. So the fact it's getting an anime adaptation must mean it's pretty good. So basically, it's about this guy and he has his girlfriend. They're much in love, but then this other girl comes up and confesses to him. He doesn't want to cheat, but he doesn't want to, I guess, lose the opportunity to date this other girl. So he asks his girlfriend if it's all right for him to date this girl too. So that's interesting. So, me personally, I would not. I'd punch him in the face for even asking a question like that. Like, how dare you? But, let's see. Okay, and then these are all the new news that I picked up last night. So let's just run through it so then we can get into our main topic. From PushSquare.com, this is talking about how for PlayStation 5 and 4, they will be having the Funimation app on their consoles, and we'll have like a new interface for fans. So that's interesting. So if you have the PlayStation 4 or you're getting this PlayStation 5, and if you download the Funimation app, it'll look different compared to if you have it, on your phone. And I guess on other consoles like Xbox or something. Next news from CNET.com. Netflix continues anime push with the Sailor Moon movie. Yes, this is something that kept popping up on my Twitter feed. Apparently, the Sailor Moon, Pretty Guardian, Sailor Moon Eternal movies part 1 and 2 would be coming to Netflix, I believe, sometime in June. It's not the exact date, but they do believe it, they do hope for it to be coming out in June. Which, of course, if you don't know, this movie released in Japan in February and covers the Dream Arc storyline from the manga or the Super S TV series of the 90s. So I cannot wait. I definitely want to watch it. So the fact that it's going to be on Netflix, which is way more easier for me to get access to since I already have a Netflix account. That just makes it way more better, and I can't wait for that to come out on Netflix. So next news from monstersandcritics.com. Apparently it's going to be a new free movie coming out in late summer. Oh, I think it's two. There's two of them. One's coming out in late summer of 2021, and then another one coming out in spring 2022. And according to this article, these two are supposed to be the last movies to kind of finish up the final chapter of the story. So I can't wait. I did not watch the other movies that came out, but I was a huge Free fan. I watched the first two series. I started watching the third season, but kind of fell off. So I would have to catch up to that before these movies come out. So I can't wait. Next piece of news from emicdope.com. That new Netflix series Yosuke apparently has a new trailer 2 days before the release on Netflix. I'm recording this. It's supposed to be coming out on the 29th, which is tomorrow. So there is a new trailer out for the anime, and honestly, it looks very cool. So I definitely recommend you guys looking it up. And as of I'm recording this, the show will be coming out tomorrow. So depending on when you read this, either it's coming out that day or it's already been out. Next week's news from AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Anime will be adding Critical Basket Season 2 to its roster on May 15th. The first season is already up there, so the second season will be coming out in May. So, yeah, because they added the first season back in January, so the second season will be coming out in May. And how many seasons are there in total? Oh, there's three. So this is just talking about it. I think when Crunchyroll had them, and when I guess they released in Japan, first season premiered in April through September of 2012. Second season of October 13th through the March, October of 2013 to March 2014. And the third season aired January through June of 2015. So they're very interesting. So the fact that they're already getting the second season out on Netflix, so then there's just that last season that needs to be put up there. So that's something to look forward to. Next news from Anime News Network. Aniplex of America announced Pula Magi Modica Magica, the movie trilogy Blu-ray. So to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the popular series with a Blu-ray release of the Pula, I can never, people have a hard time saying it, and I have a hard time saying Pula Magi Modica Magica, the movie trilogy, on July 20th of 2021. This special release includes the two theatric adaptations of the TV series, Part 1 Beginnings and Part 2 Eternal, as well as the original film Rebellion. So that's very, very interesting. So people who are a huge Modica fan, you will have this Blu-ray to look forward to on July 20th. I thought I said January again. Next news from Anime News Network as well. RetroQuest has been adding some new animes to its roster. So titles that are supposed to be releasing sometime in May: Star Ocean EX on the May 7th, Barefoot Jin and Bear Jiffin 2 on May 14th, The Law of Yukin on May 14th, Nutcracker Fantasy on the 21st, Starfleet on the 28th, NJ Knight Lumco 40 TV series and original video game anime on the 28th, and then a fresh, it will probably like be like season 2 on the 28th, and another one called Fire on the 28th as well. So it will have both the subtitled and dub versions. The Starfleet will be available with the English dub, and the remaining, so hold on, actually it's not all of them. So Star Ocean EX, The Law of Yukin, and Nutcracker Fantasy will stream with English subtitles and dubs. Starfleet will be available with an English dub, but the other remainings will only have the subtitle versions. So let me just clarify so you guys don't be looking and you can't find a dub. So only certain shows will have both dub and sub. One show will have just a dub, and then the rest will be just in subbed. Next news, this talks about from Anime News Network as well, the Yashihime Half Demon Princess TV series Part 2 sequel will be premiering in the fall. I can't wait. I definitely need to catch up. I'm on like 13th, 14th, 15th of the anime, so I have not finished the first season, so I can't wait for the second season to come out. So that's something to look forward to as well. And like, I think there's like two more pieces of news, two or three. Let's just go right through them so we can hurry up and get to the main topic. Netflix will be adding Higurashi When They Cry anime in India on May 1st. This is the, I think this is the new one, not the old one. I think this is When They Cry Go. Yeah, this is the new one. So they'll be adding, Netflix in India will be adding it to their roster in May 1st. Also from Anime News Network, the final Eureka 7 High Elevation high. Evolution film delayed to fall due to COVID. I didn't even know they were making a new Aruka 7 movie, so apparently it got delayed. Oh, okay, so it was a dope, damn. So the film was originally supposed to come out in 2019, but now has got delayed to this year. So there's not an exact date of when it's coming out, but it is supposed to be coming out this year. So I had no idea that it got pushed back from that far. Like, holy crap. And next piece of news from Anime News Network. This talks about the ending of the final season of Fruits Basket getting a new music video that features gorgeous scenes and illustrations from the anime. There also is a YouTube link on the article that you can go and watch the video yourself. Maybe I'll post that in the bottom of the descriptions of this podcast episode so you guys can have an easy way to find it. So that is it for the news section. So let's just get into our main topic. Today we'll be talking about, I went back and I realized that I never really finished up talking about My Hero. I did chapters, seasons 1-3, and I realized I never talked about season 4 yet. And with season 5 already coming out, I figured, you know what, let's talk about season 4 before we, you know, jump into talking about season 5. So season 4 pretty much picks up where it left off. One second. What the hell? That's not what I said. one second, people. Wait. Okay, here we go. Because now I found the right one. It picks up where it left off after the huge fight and free fight between All Might and, God, I always get them names mixed up. Pretty much the opposite of All Might's power. I think his name is All For One. One For All or something like that. I always get the names mixed up on which one is the one All Might has and which one is the one he has. But it kind of picks up that, you know, him retiring and, you know, people kind of being scared of what the future is going to hold now that the number one hero is pretty much retired and out of commission. So it kind of jumps in first with this. First episode kind of talks about this freelance journalist wanting to get a scope on Class 1A in the hopes of discovering the new symbol of peace after, you know, All Might's retirement. It's pretty funny because they're trying to figure out, oh, you know, maybe he kind of pieces everything together, saying how it's kind of weird how he was, you know, this symbol of hope for this whole time and suddenly joins the school after probably years of them trying to get him to be a teacher or whatever, and now that he is, and then sometime after he retires, so they're like, it's possible maybe he passed on his, well, they're not 100% sure that he passed on his powers, but they're like, oh, he's probably training one of the younger generations to kind of pick up the mantle where he left off and, you know, continue on. So it was pretty interesting how he kind of dwelt with that and how he narrowed it down to being, you know, Deku, but saying that he won't reveal it because he kind of wants that piece to come back as well, and, you know, All Might helped him when he was little and helped him, you know, achieve his dream of being a photographer, and, you know, and it was just, that's a really sweet episode, and it kind of helps you get reintroduced to all the characters again and their powers and where they stand, and it's pretty good. But in this first part of the season, because how My Hero does it, there's always two parts to a season. So the first part, we deal with this villain called Overhaul, who has apparently, you find out, has been planning and creating these bullets that can get rid of people's quirks. At the moment, he only is able to do it temporarily. He tries to recruit the League of Villains, but then they end up getting to this huge fight and he ends up killing one of the members and like wounding others, which kind of, you know, freaks you out because you're like, wait a minute, the League of Villains were kind of like the big bad in the last couple of seasons, so now that this new guy comes out of nowhere and is pretty much demolishing them, kind of gets you scared on like what this guy's abilities could really be. Also, at the time, Midoriya enters this Hero Work Studies program, you know, with everything going on, he hopes that maybe he can train under another pro hero to, you know, learn more, pick up his skills, and when he does, he runs into Mirio, which we find out, well, which we learned from last season, that he is one of the big three, and actually, I think is ranked number one, so he goes to him and is like, hey, actually, I am working under this hero, maybe if I'll put in a good word and see if he wants to meet you, which then he later finds out is All Might's former partner, Sir Night Eye, and just... yes, lots of drama. You kind of find out what the drama is because with Night Eye's ability, he's able to see into the future, and him and All Might had a falling out because he used his powers to see that All Might is going to die horribly at the hands of a villain, and he wants him to, back then he wanted him to retire and stop before that happened, and to, you know, maybe pass on his powers to someone more capable and I guess deserving of the powers, which then you find out he kind of had his eye on Mirio getting the power, so he all for one, that's what it is. So All Might has one for all and the other guy has all for one, so he wanted to pass down the all for one to Mirio, but instead it got passed down to Deku, so he kind of already has this huge negative pretty much this bad rap for Midoriya already, because he feels he took away the abilities and power that should have belonged to Mirio. So when he does, you know, is able to get into studying under Night Eye, then he kind of runs into this little girl. Well, I think he kind of gets like a warning, like, hey, if you see this guy, stay away from him. Or maybe it's afterwards, I don't remember. But then you find out that the guy, Overhaul, he is part of this Yakuza, which you find out with this whole world of heroes and villains that Yakuzas have basically not have the same power structure that they normally would have. They're pretty much kind of like the grunt work and the backgrounds the villains. Well, the villains are kind of like the villains and they're pretty much like the sidekicks. So when Midoriya and Mirio run into this girl, they run into Eri, which, poor sweet Eri. This whole season, just, you really feel for her and everything she's gone through, and it's just, oh my god. But you know, they went into her and they see she is running away from Overhaul, which they don't really know who he is at the time, but with what he's wearing, kind of, I guess it's like a staple look. Oh, he's part of the Yakuza. So when they try to like diffuse the situation and not arouse his suspicion, the poor girl, Eri, is, you know, clinging to Midoriya, whispering, please, please don't go. And, you know, that kind of kicks in Midoriya's, you know, hero mode, because he's like, this poor little girl is frightened beyond belief. She's clinging to me, and you claim to be her father, but clearly there's a reason why she is running from you, why she's clinging to me. And before the situation gets any worse, because when she sees him raising his hand, which we basically kind of figure out where he was ready to kill him, the little girl jumps off of Midoriya, runs back to him, basically saving both of them from this terrible situation. But, you know, they both don't feel good about it, but that was the best they could do at the moment, because later on when they, well, I'm kind of skipping some stuff, because we do see this Kirishima, he does end up getting a hero work study as well, where he works with the number two guy, Sun Eater, and this pro hero called Fat Gum, and then they encounter, I should say, this villain, and then apparently he's gotten this weird boost of using his power. So then you really should see Kirishima kind of like, you know, step up the plate. But at the time, Sun Eater gets shot by this bullet, I think he shoots at him, which temporarily blocks his powers. And, you know, Sun Eater uses, you know, his new abilities and all his training to stop the villain. But then at the time, that's when we find out that, and also, Uraraka and Sue were training under another pro hero with the third top rank student. I forgot what her name is. I'll find her name eventually. But they get, you know, called into this meeting with other pro heroes, them discussing, you know, the threat of overhaul and the whole Yakuza thing. That's when it's really revealed that the bullet that, you know, Sun Eater was shot with contained blood and cells of a human whose quirk is similar to Aizawa's, you know, kind of stopping. For Aizawa, he's able to temporarily stop a person's, you know, quirk when he looks at you. Girls, boys, to make this. When they think back, they realize all the bandages and stuff she had around her, and just everything they're doing to her. That's when they That's when Midoriya and Mirio are really, really determined to save Eri from this situation, because they feel bad. They felt like maybe if they maybe could have, if they had tried, maybe they could have stopped him from taking her, and maybe stop any more suffering she's probably, you know, gone through since she returned them. But, ooh, sorry about that. But basically, it's kind of like really sad, and just the whole scene. That scene when it's revealed, you know, the bullets are made from her cells, and basically that bullet that Sun Eater was hit with was just temporary, and that they're hoping to make a more permanent version of that, which we do kind of get introduced to it a little later. So, you know, and then I do love this scene where Aizawa, you know, he sees how beaten up Midoriya is, because, you know, he was there, he was holding her, but in the end, he couldn't do anything, and she had to go back to that horrible situation she's in. So, you know, he, you know, motivates her, and it's like, listen, you weren't able to do anything for her then, but you are able to do something for her now. So don't give up, because you are probably the last hope that girl needs to get out of this situation. And that was so, so good. I love Aizawa. He's such a good teacher. So, you know, they, after they find out his hideout and whatnot, that's when the plan to go save Eri is commenced. So everyone goes, and there's just so many amazing fight scenes, and just everything of them getting into the building, them, Kirishima and Fat Gum getting separated, and them taking on this huge, these two guys, one has like this cork to create it's kind of like a protective shield, and the other guys are super powerful and strong. So Kirishima tries to do his attack that he did last time, but it has no effect. He's able to like break through him. So then Fat Gum is, you know, trying to protect him, and it's just, then you kind of see a flashback of him and kind of why he is the person that he is today, because when he was younger, back in I think like middle school, he saw these two girls being kind of harassed by this villain, and the person that ended up saving the two girls and helping them out turned out to be Mina. So that kind of like made him freeze up, and he realized that he can't really do anything, and that's how he ended up getting his inspiration from that other pro hero he kind of idolized. I think his name's like Crimson Riot or something. He calls it Red Riot. So I think that's who he kind of helped him, you know, be the person that he is now. So he does that, powers up again, and was able to give Fat Gum the opportunity to end up defeating the two villains, which, so good. Very good episode. I think before that, there is a fight with Sun Eater and him taking on these three other, you know, villains. One's able to, like, has like this insatiable appetite, so he eats everything and anything, which is so creepy. One's able to create like crystals while the other one, I forgot what the other one does. Yeah, I kind of forget what the other one did. But, you know, seeing him take on three people at once and just, you kind of see his background too, how he's the shy, quiet type and doesn't want to stand out and just, but you really see him shine and how he got his name, Sun Eater, from Mirio, and how he looks up to him and wants to be that, you know, person by his side. And it's so good. That fight was amazing too. But, as you know, they're going on and more things are happening at the time. The League of Villains do form an alliance with Overhaul, but then they end up backstabbing them as they use one of them to taunt their leader, which he is using his quirk to like manipulate the rooms and the area. But it doesn't affect Mirio, so with his quirk, he can just pass through anything. So he is able to, you know, continue on while the others are trying to, like, find a way back to them. And, you know, you see the League of Villains, you know, taking on the, you know, kind of backstabbing them since they did feel kind of bad and mad for what they did, for, you know, him killing one of their members earlier in the season. So, with that, Mirio ends up running straight for Ares and Overhaul, where he does end up saving her, but he is taking on like three other people. One has like this drinking ability, but instead of him getting drunk, he like makes you feel like you're drunk. And another one can it's funny because he's able to like force you to speak the truth. You can't lie around him, which is funny because he used it on the two League Villains people to say like, hey, did what was his name, Higurashi, did he you know, tell you to come and join us and then later betray them? But they were like, no, he didn't tell us to do that. But just funny because it's like, it's true, he didn't tell us to do that, we were going to betray you anyway. So kind of backfired on that. But you know, he uses that to tell so that Mirio reveals his like quirks and how it works. And you know, he's able to he's able to take them on, but then he's taking on Overhaul. And of course, at this time, they thought Aerie was his daughter, but then it turns out that wasn't true. I think later on it's revealed that she's actually the granddaughter of the real head of the Yakuza. Overhaul is just an adopted son, and he feels so indebted to them that he wants to bring, you know, that family back to glory and whatnot. And basically, Aerie was pretty much abandoned by her mother, who I guess was the daughter of the head Yakuza guy, because when Aerie was a baby, her powers accidentally activated and pretty much kind of killed her father or zapped him to oblivion. And I guess the mother just couldn't forgive her for that, so then she ended up just abandoning her and running away, which, like, really, lady? Come on now. So, you know, and then she got taken in, and when Overhaul, I guess, sees her abilities, that's when he starts, you know, experimenting on her and using her to create the bullets. And then, but of course, at this time, we find out that he has two bullets, one red and one blue. Then, you know, Mirio is pretty much, you know, fighting and, you know, holding his own, but then they end up shooting the bullet, but they think at Aerie, which turned out to be a plan because they knew that he would not dodge it since he can't phase through anything. So he ends up taking the bullet and it takes away his quirk. And like I said, this is the pretty much full working version, so his power is now completely gone, but he's still fighting and it's so cool. Like, even because I think they explain a little later that he fought for 5 minutes without his quirk and was still holding his own and still kind of, you know, defending Aerie, defending himself and still taking, you know, giving them a run for his money. But then at the time when it seems like Mirio is about to be killed and Aerie taken away again, that's when Midoriya crashes in and Night Eye as well. So, yeah, next episode's when it's revealed that she's the granddaughter of the original, the main boss, and that he I think it's revealed here or maybe later on that his plan was to sell the cork erasing bullets to the villains and then sell the antidote to the heroes so he can monopolize that whole community and whatnot to make him and his Yakuza clan powerful and rich again. So that was really his plan. What you think about it's pretty smart. He was going to sell the pretty much drug to the enemies and then sell the antidote to the other side and just monopolize that whole situation. It was just like, wow. But let's see, what's else? When Night Eye orders Izuku and Mirio to take Aries safely while he holds off Overhaul, but that doesn't really work out well because he ends up getting stabbed through the stomach with this huge spike. And Foresight, I think, is the guy. No, that's his power. And then he uses Foresight to kind of figure out how to get out of this. But then he sees him and Midoriya being killed by Overhaul and him escaping with Aries. But despite that, Midoriya keeps, you know, fighting on. Excuse me. Back up top, you see Uraraka, Shisu, and that other pro hero. What was her name? Dragon Lady. Pretty much, you know, they're fighting off, holding off the people when you see Midoriya kind of like, hey, there's an opening over here. You guys need to come help. Then you find out that wasn't really him. That was that girl that can take people's blood and can transform into them, kind of giving them heroes or extra boost, kind of sticking it to the Yakuza once again. So when they do that, and when it seems like it, even with them coming up to help, and it seems like everything overall is going to escape with Aerie again, Aerie, you know, seeing Midoriya trying so hard to save him, that's when it's revealed her power to rewind living things. You know, at the time, let's skip this one part. They were able to take down another one of the minions that Overhaul had, so he ended up using his cork where he's able to like disassemble and reassemble pretty much anything. He disassembles his subordinate and reassembles it to him, making him like really powerful. So with Aerie, you know, seeing Midoriya trying to save her and kind of giving her that little light of hope she needs, her powers temporary, or kind of not temporary because it does activate for a while, activates again, and she's able to separate the two of them while grabbing onto Midoriya. So when it seems like Overhaul's about to go after them again, he jumps into the air super high. That's when he realizes that he used all for one at 100%, but he's confused as to why he his bones and whatnot is not broken, because normally when he uses, he's only able to use like, I think, God, like maybe 12-16% at this point. So the fact that he's able to use 100% and he's not hurt, he's confused. But then that's when he realizes that Aries' powers are kind of rewinding him to a point that his body is healing as he's using his powers to its limits. So he uses that when Overhaul comes after them again kind of takes like this, I think the cape she was holding on to, which was Mirio's cape, to wrap her around him and tells her to keep using his powers while he powers up to 100% and takes out Overhaul. Like, let me tell you, that fight sequence was amazing. Him taking out Overhaul 100%, just demolishing him. Just like, it lets you know like what the potential for Midoriya could be when he's able to use his cork at 100% and like train it, and it like, it's just so good, it's so amazing. So he's able to, you know, defeat Overhaul, which surprises Night Eye, because of course he used his foresight cork to see into the future and saw that Midoriya was supposed to die and Aerie was taken away by Overhaul. He escaped, so, and it, you know, surprises him because normally his visions are pretty much right 90% of the time. So seeing that kind of gives him, you know, hope that maybe his vision of seeing All Might, you know, die a horrible, gruesome death at the hands of a villain probably isn't correct as well. But so at the end, everyone is kind of rallying up the rest of the villains. Everyone that's hurt's being taken away to the hospital. People are still okay, and I mean, people are severely hurt and wounded, but most people are alive. But there is this one moment where Eri's powers go out of control, and it's really damaging Midoriya. But at the time, Aizawa is brought up to the surface, and he uses his power to stop her quirk, which not then kind of knocks her out, I guess, because she doesn't have control over it. So all that kind of zapped the last bit of energy she had in her. So everyone's getting taken to the hospital. Everyone's getting treated for their wounds. Everyone, except for Night Eye, which when they get to the hospital and they explain, everyone's seen no conditions and whatnot, they tell that his injuries are way too fatal and that he doesn't have much time left. So you see him and All Might kind of finally talking, and he kind of, I love the moment he joked and he's like, "Oh, so now you finally decide to come and see me when I'm pretty much on my deathbed." But they finally talk and resolve any issues they have, and oh, the scene of Mirio running and crying, saying, "No, please, you can't leave us yet. There's so much I had to learn from you, and this is, he can't be over." And when he uses his quirk one last time to see into Mirio's future, and he says, "Don't worry, it'll be all right. You're going to be an amazing hero," which kind of foreshadows that maybe somehow down the line Mirio will be able to get his quirk back. And it's just, ugh. Then you see him slowly falling, his hand, and he, it's nice when he dies, and it's, ugh. I remember I was crying my eyes out, because I mean, because you first meet him and he's such a jerk and he's such an asshole, Midoriya, but then you see later on that he was kind of just he cared about Midoriya, I mean not Midoriya, All Might. He cared, and he didn't want to see that happen to him. So, and I guess their ideals just didn't clash together. So it just really, really hurts to see that. And him and that final moment of him kind of finally reconciling with All Might, and accepting Midoriya and telling Mirio it's gonna be fine. You'll still be able to accomplish your goals. And but before that, we do get a scene of Overhaul getting taken away, and the League of Villains pretty much taking out the heroes that were, guarding him, and them kind of again continuing on their revenge and be like, "Hey, you thought you were going to use us, but we were using you." End up taking the bullets, the leftover bullets he had left, and pretty much killing off his arms. Like, they destroyed his arm so that he can never use his quirk again, which really takes a lot out of him, because he, when you find out what happened to the Eri's grandfather, he didn't want Overhaul to do what he was doing. So Overhaul used his quirk to temporarily like paralyze him and disable him. So he was like, "Once everything is done and our clan is back on top, I'll use my quirk and I'll put you back to normal." But now that both of his arms are gone, he won't be able to fix up the her grandfather. So now her grandfather's stuck in that state forever, and he lost both of his arms. So it's just, it really, really gets you. And it's like, holy crap. So now the League of Villains have these quirk destroying bullets, and it's just, oh God. It just lets you know, like, shit's about to go down in the next couple of, not in this season, because like I said, this is kind of the end of that arc. But I wouldn't be surprised if they pop up in the next season, in the fifth season, with those bullets. Oh man, I can't even, like, I think they said there was like maybe four or five of them left, the ones that can destroy quirks. So that just, oh, that just scares you of what these people can do with those bullets. So yeah, that's pretty much the end of that arc. So the next arc is kind of pretty much a, kind of, I guess you could say, like a version of the sports fest. It's kind of more like a cultural fest. So Mirio and excuse me, Midoriya and Mirio still, kind of talk and whatnot. And he goes to try to check up on Airy whenever he can. And I do like that one little scene I'll get to later with her. Oh, so cute. But there is this cultural festival going on, but they aren't sure with everything going on with, you know, villains. You know, they think it might be best to cancel it, but they feel like, no, we need to do this because this will help lift the spirits of the students. You know, there's already so much going on in the world. We can't really have, you know, this going on too. So, there's more like three parts to this, I should say, because it is this whole Todoroki and Bakugo still trying to get their provisional hero license, and them going through this kind of like a task of them taking care of these really kind of overpower and power hungry kids who have these quirks, and trying to like show them like, hey, heroes can be cool too, and we can do amazing things. We don't just fight. And so I did like that little four episode arc. That was pretty cute. But like I said, back to the cultural festival, you know, at the time, this is the part I was talking about when, you know, they're trying to get ready for that, and then they're trying to decide what to do. Airy kind of finally wakes up after, you know, I guess being unconscious, and, you know, from her quirk, she immediately says that she wants to meet the two people who helped her, Mizuko, Midoriya, and Mirio. And I was like, oh, you sweet, sweet girl. I can't. Stop being adorable. Just stop it. You know, she wants to see them, and she wants to thank them for saving her. And, oh, that scene that crushed my heart. She was like, oh, I remember you and you. She was like, oh, yeah, and there was a man with glasses. He helped me, too. And I was like, oh, please don't, because at that time, they've already had his funeral. So when she says that, you're like, oh, my God, you poor thing. You don't even know. It's like, yes, and she feels bad, because she's like, you guys nearly died for me. And she didn't like that. She hated the fact that, you know, people were dying for her. And that's kind of one of the things that they used against her when she tried to, like, run away one time with Mirio. Like, they like kind of like talked and like, hey, people are dying because of you again, but if you stay by my side and do what I say, people won't be hurt. And it's just, oh, and so it's like, you don't want to tell her that, yeah, he died, so then, because that would just go back to, you know, her whole trauma of, you know, her people dying for her. And it's just like, oh my God, you poor sweet child, you've gone through way too much to be this adorable. So, you know, so when they decide, hey, why don't we, because they realize, you know, she's free, but she's not completely free, because she still has, you know, that lingering fear and everything she's went through all her life. So Midoriya comes up with the idea, hey, let's invite her to the festival. Maybe if we show her around and show her a good time, she'll be able to, you know, finally and truly smile. So that's like, yeah, that'd be a great idea. Let's go to the school, you know, ask the principal, you know, get everything, you know, set up so that she can come. Since I think it's a one that most people can come to, but this year they kind of just did it for the students. So they were like, hey, let's ask the principal and the teachers and see if it's okay to bring her along. And then also at the time, we got this villain called Gentle Criminal, trying to pretty much make a name for himself, which I'm kind of going to skip that, because I honestly didn't really like that whole sub-villain part with him, because it kind of helped in a way, because he kind of reminded you of Midoriya in a way, which I guess it was what they were trying to do in the end, kind of be like, he was kind of what Midoriya was. Like, he was what Midoriya was in the past, but because I guess he didn't have that push or something happened to make him see the other side, he ended up turning into the dark side. So there was kind of like that parallel of, you know, him and Midoriya are so similar, but something happened to him that pushed him over the edge. And just, you know, helping him, you know, redeemed himself and, you know, getting back on the right track. But I do love the whole school festival thing. That's probably like my best part of this arc. You see everyone getting ready, and you see them getting ready to perform a concert, and, you know, just them, the whole thing with him too, with Gentle Criminal, the fact that they were like, oh, if anything happens, even if it's a false alarm, they'll have to shut down the whole thing. And of course, Midoriya doesn't want that to happen because he wants to bring Eri there to lift up his spirits. So when he does see, when him and Gentle Criminal do run into each other, he's doing everything in his power to not arouse the suspicion of the school, because if they find a villain's near the in the facility, they'll have to shut everything down, and then, you know, it won't be, he won't be able to help, you know, lift Aerie's spirits up. So it was just, oh my god. But they were, he was able to, you know, stop him and was able to get to the festival in time. And let me tell you, that whole festival scene, this probably, there is a clip on YouTube of the song that they end up playing and them, you know, and everything. It's just, ugh, it's so good. And just, you see Aerie's face light up for the first time of true general joy and happiness. And, you know, you see Muriel's like, sir, Midoriya, look, she's smiling, she's finally truly smiling. And after that, she's like, you see the biggest and happiest smile on her face since you've seen her. She goes to Midoriya and she's like, oh my god, it was so cool and it was so amazing, you were doing all this but then you went away, and then all these lights and birds, and just, oh, you see the absolute joy on her face. And Midoriya is just like, oh my god, so good, so good. So yeah, after that, then they go through the festival. There's this beauty pageant that the girl, the top three, end up winning. I keep forgetting her name. I haven't been able to find her name. But you know, you see everyone kind of just enjoying, you know, that the festival, everyone's having a good time. You see Aerie having a good time. I forgot to mention that one of the things that they kind of convinced her to be like, oh yeah, yeah, I'll come, they described candy apples to her, and she was like, oh, I've never had a candy apple before. But then they couldn't find a stall that was selling it, so Midoriya, you know, with one of his classmates, end up making a personal one just for her. You see her biting into it and just enjoying it. You're like, oh, you sweet, sweet, sweet child. Oh my god, you just need, you need a hug, you need hugs and puppies and kittens and just everything. You are the cutest, adorable thing in the world, and you need to be protected at all times. Ugh, I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it. I'm sorry, I just can't, like, she is just too adorable, I just can't help it. But then the last two episodes are pretty much, I guess you could say, kind of what will be going on in the next season, really. Kind of. Well, introducing more characters, because there is, like, this huge event called the Japanese Hero Billboard Charts, where they reveal the top heroes, and Endeavor has joined up as number one. And, you know, you get introduced to new heroes. This is one called Hawks, who's the new number two. And basically, this kind of focuses more on Todoroki, since, you know, he sees his dad, and just kind of seeing what everything, and, you know, he still is kind of iffy on his dad, but you kind of see him making a progress, which I know some people are kind of like, oh, no, he's trying, you know, he's trying to be a better dad and, you know, make up for his mistakes. No, fuck that man, okay? He was a terrible human being. I don't give a damn how much time he tries to redeem himself. He is a horrible, horrible person who just, oh my god, even, okay, I will admit his fight scene was pretty badass, but the fact that you basically, you forced this woman to marry you, basically using her family to force her to marry you. So I'm getting hit. Ooh, I'm sorry. I was getting too heated, because it's like you force this woman to marry you by using her family, which, fuck her family, okay? Like, her family is just, I hate people like that. Like, you were, they were so, probably so enthralled, like, oh, the number two hero wants to marry our daughter. Why would we say no? And he's probably gonna give us a bunch of money, and, you know, we could say, hey, well, my daughter's the wife of the second pro hero. And it's like, no, fuck you. You, they have no idea what everything they went through. And you even see times when she, like, tries to call for help for her family, and I'm pretty sure they were like, oh, you just need to deal with it, You're married to the number two hero. I don't see what the problem is. How about you live with this monster, huh? How about you do that? So, you know, kind of, and then, like, kind of quote unquote forcing her to keep having these, not forcing her to have the kids, but like, the only reason why he wanted the kids so badly was because he wanted a kid that would be the perfect combination of both fire and ice. So you kind of see that he abandoned his, he kind of go through it. Cause you know he had like other siblings, Todoroki. He's like the fourth child and the youngest. He has two older brothers, which we don't even know what happened to the first brother, but we kind of heard that he kind of, I guess, took after the dad and that he has fire abilities, so we kind of abandoned him. Then the second son, or I think it's the daughter, who's the second oldest that we saw in like the second season of it, I think. She's the one with the white hair with a little bit of red in it. I think she mostly can use ice powers. Probably has a little bit of fire abilities, but mostly it's kind of like the mom has ice abilities. So kind of just gave up on her too. And then the second son, I don't even know what his ability is. Is he like a mixture of both, or can he use ice more and fire more? I don't know. But kind of gave up on him. But then focuses mostly on Todoroki and the fact that he was, I guess, the perfect combination of fire and ice. And, you know, seeing him training him when he was a little kid, punching him to the point that he's throwing up. When the mom tries to jump in and save, like, hey, he's just a little kid. You don't need to be training him this hard. Like, pretty much backhands her and be like, shut up. He's the perfect vessel to beat All Might. He's my kid. I'll do what I want. And just, oh, my God. And driving that woman to pretty much almost burn her kid alive, and then even after all that was like, oh well, she tried to hurt my masterpiece, so I sent her away where she belongs. Excuse me, you are the reason why this happens. And I totally understand Todoroki's hatred for his dad. Is like, especially when he was a kid and you see that flashback, he's like, you're the one who made her hurt me, you've caused all this misery all for your ego and pride, and it's just like, you've caused all of us to suffer just for your own vanity. And it's like, no, f you, I don't care how much he tries to redeem himself. Because, you know, you see here, I'm getting way too off, I'm sorry. It's just like, that gets me so heated. And then like, I kind of hear in like fan base like, oh, Endeavor's not that bad. Excuse me, did you guys just totally forget it, all the horrible things he's done since then? It's like the fact that you're trying to redeem yourself, you should have been done that from years ago. You shouldn't have done that now. You should have been done that from years ago. So, you know, you see him sending flowers to the wife. I think like coming in every once in a while, seeing her. I totally get the son being like, no, F him. He destroyed our family. He caused all this misery. Like, I'm not gonna forgive him that easily. Like, no. And I totally understand it. It's like, no, F this man. So, you know, he gets rise up to number one spot, and he kind of says, well, you know, I know a lot of you probably don't see me as that, but I'm going to try and do it in the best way I know how. And then when a Normu attacks attacks the town, and pretty much just, he's very struggling to take down this Normu. I think like it's gotten upgraded from the one that All Might fought in season one. And it's a lot going on. It's so much going on. And just he nearly dies defeating this Normu, because he ends up getting like stabbed in the eyes. Everything's being recorded live. So he's getting like punched. And he loses his eye. Then he's getting this huge scar on his face, and it's just like, what in the world? This Normu is insane. You see other heroes trying to help, and you know, clear out the civilians. So then he ends up pushing himself all the way to the limit and defeating this Normu. Which then you find out kind of why he wanted the ice powers to, because when he uses his flame powers, it overheats his body, which could kill him. So he wanted a child to have the perfect balance, because I guess the same way for the mom, if she uses her ice powers too much, end up freezing her over and killing her. So he wanted the child to have the perfect combination, so they could able to use fire and the ice can, you know, cool down the body. And then if they use ice, the fire would heat up the body, so it'd be a perfect combination, so he could so the child could use both abilities to its fullest without either burning up to death or freezing to death. So, you know, you just see this whole thing. You see Todoroki, you know, even though he kind of still hasn't forgiven his dad at this point, he's still worried because, like, that's my dad. He's fighting this hard and, you know, he ends up defeating the Nomunien and kind of gets trying to change public's view on him because, you know, he's known as, like, the jerk who won't sign people's autographs and whatnot. So, I totally I like I said I his thing is badass, and honestly for me I would have to see him do a lot more to fully redeem him for all the horrible things he's done, but I would say at least he's trying at least. But my dude, you got, it's not like a 1-2, you should forgive him like that. Like, no, you've caused suffering for years. Like, we don't even know what happened to your first son. We kind of see how your two other children kind of feel about you, and we know Todoroki hates your freaking guts, so you have a lot, and it's gonna take probably years to win back the love and affection that of your family, because at this point I don't know what to say, my dude. But that's pretty much the end, except we do see at the end Midoriya does have this weird dream or he encounters the previous users of All For One, including the first and the younger brother of All For One, which is, I think, was revealed that they were brothers, and the one brother got the One For All, which was the villain, and then we have the All For One, which I guess was the younger brother, and just a huge feud between the two and the powers, and then they have this weird moment, like, as their hands meet, Midoriya wakes up with his hand glowing with All For One power, and it's just, so you kind of see, and the way they do it, it kind of minimalized, like, you see only a little bit of Midoriya's, like, face, but I guess kind of symbolizes the percentage of power he's able to use. But for all the other previous users, you see them all fully to let you know, like, they were able to use 100%, and Midoriya still has a long way to go before he gets to that point. And it's so good. Like, I love My Hero. I'm definitely going to be watching the 5th season when it's out in its entirety, because I'm the type of person that could definitely binge a season in a couple of 1 or 2 days if you give me if I have the time. So I can't wait to see what this 5th season is going to be coming out. Right now, I believe they're in, like, this training arc for the 5th season, but that's probably the first half of it. So I personally cannot wait for the second what the second part's gonna do, because I heard that second part's supposed to be amazing by manga users. So I personally cannot wait. I heard it's going to be amazing. So thank you again for listening. I don't know what I'm gonna be doing next. There are some shows that I have finished before that I probably might do a quick review, might do an episode on. So that's really it, you guys. So thank you again for listening, and before we get off, this will be the opening for the part 2 of the 4th season. So thank you again for watching, and as they will say in My Hero, I forgot what it is, because I got mixed up with Black Clover when Yami always says push past your limits. I forget what it is. My mind is blanking. I'm totally blanking. I can't remember. Well, thank you again for listening, and I'll see you guys next time. そこに迷い戸惑う夢のまばたきに流れ星が頬を伝っても